This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I feel bad because I immediately broke the rules.
I'm shocked. I am shocked. The guy who tried to get me arrested, Narco and Mercantes, or whatever that's called.
Narco Traficante.
Narco Traficante is breaking the rules.
Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, Bigfoot fan fiction enthusiast, my brother Mike.
Hey, I'm not saying Bigfoot's real. I'm not saying Bigfoot isn't real. I'm saying I'm not going to get caught by surprise, okay? I'm going to be prepared, okay? I'm going to be...
See, I read this as
deadly
Bigfoot fan fiction enthusiast rather than Bigfoot fan fiction enthusiast. Do you see what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I got what you're saying.
People out there?
Weirdos,
you know what I'm
saying. Get out of here.
When I read it,
I was thinking, oh, this is a person who likes to write Bigfoot fan fiction. But now that I'm reading it again, I'm going, maybe this is just a person who reads, really into reading that stuff.
This was inspired by the story of two, 3 years ago, a story came out about some politician. I can't remember who. He was not a very well-known politician who he was being investigated for something, and they found a bunch of like Bigfoot. I'm gonna call it fan fiction, but it's the type of fan fiction. You hear what I'm talking about? That kind of fan fiction. They found a bunch of it on his computer. They're like, this dude writes Bigfoot fan fiction. It was like, it became like a thing. Like that became the story.
Call it what it was. It was Bigfoot erotica.
It was Bigfoot erotica. It was what it was. And here's the thing. If you're being investigated for something, the story will very quickly become about Bigfoot erotica if that's what they find, right? Exactly. Like, it doesn't matter what crimes you committed. If there's Bigfoot erotica on there, that's what that's what it's all about.
The story is going to be whatever your weirdest interest is, okay? Yours will be crappy facial hair. That's going
to
be
I'm glad this is how the episode has started, because that's what I want it to be about. On this week's episode, we'll dig into an important winning week of baseball from the Royals. Boy, does it feel good to get back to winning and to win this big series against Cleveland. We'll also continue our conversation on the MLB draft, which is now only 2 weeks away.
Oh my gosh.
Still the draft time. I know. It always sneaks up on me. But we're going to talk about prospects that we like at picks 39 and 41. This time around, because I think we're close enough now, we've done enough research now that we can talk about later picks in the draft, not just the Royals' top pick at pick 6. And then we'll end this week by previewing this week's games and then doing our Just a Bit Outside segment like always. But first, we really got to stress this. Make sure you're subscribing to the Royals Weekly Substack, because subscribers are getting all this awesome content. They got a midweek episode that was excellent. They got a prospect profile from Mike on. Mike, who was the prospect profile on this week? I've forgotten already.
Who was it?
Noah Cameron.
Yeah, Noah Cameron.
It was Noah Cameron. Yeah, it was a great profile on Noah Cameron. And yeah, went out and pitched well again this week. Yeah. And then I put out a thing today that was mostly about Vinny Pascantino and Alec Marsh that I thought was really good. So make sure you're subscribed to that for all this extra content. Only $5 a month, and you get all this extra stuff from us. We're happy to put it out there, and we're having a great conversation with people on Substack, so that's wonderful. Also, make sure you're liking and subscribing and giving us the thumbs up and giving us reviews on Apple Podcasts. We love reading those on the air or on the episode. It's fantastic, so make sure you're doing all that sort of stuff. It helps us out tremendously, and we really, really appreciate it. So thank you to everybody who's doing that sort of thing. We really, really love it. We also have to remind you that BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, to soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to their online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. 50%. You want that free bet credit. That's a big 50%. Mm-hmm. Bet online. The game starts here. We'll start a review of last week with roster news. There was quite a bit of it. Some interesting stuff to talk about. First, we'll talk about, so I guess this might be the biggest point of it, but the Royals optioned Nelson Velasquez down to AAA. He was struggling all year, really. I mean, he had a couple hot weeks to begin the season, but other than that, he's been struggling offensively, trying to find some consistency. Now he's down in AAA. He has options left. He's still only, I think, 25 years old, so still time for him. But, Mike, what are your thoughts on Velasquez being sent down to AAA?
Well, it came to a – we're coming to a point, if you want to say that. The deeper that we get into the season and this team is winning and competitive and challenging for playoff spots, the less able the Major League roster is going to be to carry a guy like Nelson Velasquez and let him kind of figure it out at the Major League level. I mean, I hate to say it because we've talked about this with MJ Melendez as well, and he looks like maybe he's turned a corner, which would be great because as we get deeper into the season, the Nelson Velasquez is who you're hoping can turn it around. You can't hang on to him if they have options. You have to get somebody up here who's going to be able to help you win baseball games, and Nelson Velasquez wasn't helping do that.
Yeah, he had a significant chance this year to figure it out, to find it, to that sort of thing. And so it wasn't like it was some sort of unfair thing. Like, he had his shot. I think it's fine because there are options. Because he has options, it's fine. Like, send him down, bring somebody up who can be more competitive. I don't know that they have anybody at the AAA level who's actually going to any surefire thing to be better than Nelson Velasquez. Oddly, Velasquez homered in today's game down in Omaha. But he's only 25. There's still a chance that he finds it even before the end of this season and comes up to help them make a push in August or September or something like that. It wouldn't be unheard of if he went down, got some work in, figured something out, and came out and had a hot stretch to help them make the playoffs. But it's good to have guys with options because that means you can send him down, bring him back up, and it's no big deal, right? And so whether it's Velasquez or someone else, you got to ride the hot hand. You got to ride whoever's hitting. They sent him down because he's not, and they brought some other people to see if they could catch some of the fire that they have down in AAA. And hopefully that ends up happening. One of the guys who they brought up to hopefully catch some of that hot fire. See, this was all really done, right, to like spark the offense because the offense was in such a dark place. They brought up CJ Alexander to help see if they could catch some of the fire that he was having down in AAA because he was hitting really well all season down there. It was in sort of a corresponding move. They designated Jake Brents for assignment because they needed to make room for CJ Alexander on the 40 man. So Jake Brents was DFA'd. He has since been sent to Northwest Arkansas. Thank you for noting that because I couldn't remember if it was there or Omaha. Anyway, CJ Alexander is now on the 40 man. He's on the 26 man. He's with Kansas City. Mike, what are your thoughts on getting Alexander up and DFAing Jake Brents?
Well, I like that Alexander gets a shot because he's a little bit of an older prospect. A lot of people didn't even really think of him as a prospect, but he's having such a big year. He seems to have taken on some of the new hitting stuff from 2 years ago and really benefited from some of those things. And so you got to give him a shot. The only thing I'm thinking is kind of what you've already hinted at is that, do you think CJ Alexander is going to be somebody who really has a big impact, a positive impact on the Major League club right away? I don't. And this team needs to be working to win games. So I think it's going to be hard to find spots for him. I think you have to really be judicious with what chances you're going to give CJ Alexander with his time in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he did earn it. I mean, he hit well down in AAA. There's no doubt about it. And if you're an organization that's like, hey, eventually we have to see what Alexander can do at the Major League level so that we know whether or not we should be giving him more chances or we don't miss out on a late blooming prospect of some sort, in the same way that they may have on like Brent Rooker, for example, right? You have to give a guy like Alexander some sort of chance if he's going to hit well enough at AAA. But I don't have high hopes for him, mostly because of his profile. He strikes out a lot. He has a lot of swing and miss in there. And he sort of lives on batted ball success because he doesn't walk a ton either. And so it's like he is going to be counting on getting the right launch angle, a ton of exit velocity, and that sort of thing. But that's going to be real hard to come by. And he doesn't provide a ton of value in any other way. He's not like a defensive wizard anywhere or anything like that. So he's got to hit. The bar for him hitting is very high. And yet he still has all these like approach and swing and miss issues. And so, you know, it's good that they gave him a shot. You know, I think that's better than waiting and waiting and waiting for Velasquez to turn it around. But I'm not sure that he is necessarily the answer either. And so the fact of the matter is they just don't have a ton of great hitting options down in AAA right now. They did get one guy back who has seemingly helped their lineup at least a little bit. And when he's healthy, has really done well this year. They activated Michael Massey from the injured list. And he's been up for the last few days, though they did say that he's only going to DH for right now, as he's not 100% coming off of his back injury. At the same time, they put Adam Frazier on the 10-day injured list with a right thumb sprain. Mike, what are your thoughts about getting Massey back and losing Frazier to the IL?
This is a little confusing to me. That was my thought initially. My thought is, why would you bring Michael Massey back if he can't play the field? Like, I understand you're playing very important baseball right now, but he's a big part of your future. He's a big part if you're going to be successful this year. So I don't know why I would put somebody out there if they're in a situation where they can't play the field, which, by the way, is a big chunk of Michael Massey's value as well. Not that he hasn't hit well this year, because he has, and I think he makes your lineup better, but he was our minor league gold glover of the year or something like that one time. Not that that really means anything, but still, he plays an above average at least second base. And so I would have probably waited a little bit longer. I know Frazier has the thumb and he had to go on the IL, and maybe there isn't a whole lot to pull from. You might be right. There's not a lot to pull from in AAA, so maybe this was the reasoning. But I would have waited a little longer till he could play defense too. Or maybe this is them telling us, with this kind of injury, you'll never know when he's better. You know, they may be saying he might not be better the rest of this season. We don't know.
Yeah, I think they are sort of. I think that is. They're not saying it, and you know, I don't know that they ever would, but there are things that are giving me vibes that this is going to be a chronic thing. This is going to be a thing that he has to deal with for his entire career. And so they're probably thinking to themselves, well, he's not going to do any damage to it hitting. And so I don't know. They must think that, or else how could they let him go out and hit? Right?
Because you slide wrong head first, and you, I mean,
right. It would be irresponsible to let him go out and play if he could injure himself more doing it. And so, yeah, I'm a little perplexed by that notion too, but they desperately needed an offensive spark, and he is somebody who has the capacity to be that. And he has hit well since coming back. I think they're sort of resigned to the notion that Massey is going to be a guy who doesn't play 100% of the games, who maybe only plays 60 to 80% of the games. And they're happy to have him when he's in there, because he's learned how to like come off the IL and just start hitting immediately and that sort of thing. And, you know, they're like, fine, we'll take what we can get from you, Massey. And other than that, we'll have guys like Nick Lofton and Michael Garcia and you know, Garrett Hampson and so on and so forth, who can cover when you're not there. And so that seems to be what they're doing. And, you know, it is what it is. Frazier, I'm just like, you know, it's, you know, sorry that he's in pain, probably. But, you know, losing him for 10 days is not really going to make any sort of difference to the Royals. And so I don't know. Huge deal.
I have a question for you. Does the fact that this could be a chronic thing for Massey dampen in any way your expectations for his career as a Royal?
Yes, it does. I mean, the thing that dampens it is not the notion that it could be chronic, because we saw Lorenzo Cain, who virtually never played more than 70 to 75% of the games. While he was a Royal, he didn't. Go look at the numbers.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about when he was in Milwaukee. I was like, because no. he missed long stretches there too. And I was like,
he did,
you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. That was his whole career. He actually never played more than, I think, 75% of the games of a season. I'm not sure about that, but like most seasons you'll see, he didn't play that much more than 75% of the games. Right. And if Massey's like that and can sort of do that, though, can play 75% of the games, great. My worry about a chronic injury of some sort is that it becomes an injury that gets worse and worse and worse, or that it becomes something that is keeping you out for long stretches. And that's when it's like, oh no. Like, and so I would be, it makes me a little bit more bearish on his outcome as a player, honestly. And so we'll see on that. I think they're still looking for an answer at second base if Michael Massey can't stay healthy. On the field this week, the Royals experienced a resurgence of sorts. It was great to see. They went 5-2, which brings their overall record to 47-39. After struggling to take 2 of 3 from the lowly Miami Marlins to start the week, the offense found its footing against division rival Cleveland Guardians, and that allowed the boys to take 3 of 4 and gain ground in the AL Central, as well as gaining ground back in the wild card. Mike, how are you feeling about what took place last week?
You know what's weird? I can't make a blanket statement about what happened last week, because those series were so different from each other, even though they were both winning series. That coming out of that Miami series, I was like, hey, cool to get 2 of 3, but we didn't look all that good. I mean, our offense still did not look good. Our pitching was fantastic. Our bullpen, you know, even including the bullpen, though you still felt like there were some moments there that scared you a little bit. And so coming into this Guardian series, I was like, no, boy, this could get rough. And I'm coming out of it, I'm feeling great how they're playing. You know, the offense started really roughing up Cleveland starters, which we said they might do because we did like the matchups. Mm-hmm. But that's what you got to do. They weren't hitting against guys you should have hit in that Miami series. They had three opportunities to hit their starters who were not very good.
Terrible. Their starters
did not
do
anything. And then in this Cleveland one, I mean, they beat the crap out of Tristan McKenzie. Like they were great. Today's was another great example. Like that's a fantastic pitcher. Logan Allen was an all-world prospect, wasn't he? If I'm remembering right.
Honestly, I think that's a different Logan Allen. I think there were two
Logan
kidding?
Allens.
Okay, I'm not 100% sure about that, but I could be right about that. But you're right. Either way, Allen is a solid pitcher. McKenzie, he's really struggling bad since he got back from injury. He was injured all of last year, I think. He struggled the entirety of this year. So, you know, not surprised to see the Royals get on top of him. But
I was after that Miami series and after that Texas series. I was.
Well, yeah. After those, I get surprised if they can hit off a, you know, kid little league team. But the thing about the Bibee start was interesting to me because a couple things go their way in that start, and they probably tag him for 4 or 5 runs. He was not dominant in that start in any stretch of the imagination. They were fouling off a bunch of pitches. They looked like they were locked in and just right on top of him. Yeah, he managed to scrape through 5 or 6 with a couple of runs, but I thought that they looked good offensively all series. And honestly, they need this offensive surge to continue. They need it to last because the deep, dark pits of offensive woes they fall into, that you can blanket over some of that with good starting pitching, but only so much. And they just can't go into another one of those huge funks again offensively. And so this has primarily been, you know, catalyst by Salvador Perez and Vinny Pasquantino finally starting to hit again. And so if that can just continue, then I think they got a chance to continue this role, and they need it because they're still in that week, that soft stretch of their schedule. They need to make some hay while the sun shines here. Mike, in a week where they went 5-2, plenty of strong performers to choose from, who did you decide to go with?
Yeah, it was actually hard to find the weak performers for this week, but I went with Hunter Renfroe because I don't think he's been a strong performer for us maybe at all this year yet. And he's probably, you know, as far as position player goes, he's our biggest offseason acquisition. And so, yeah, 8-for-22 this week with a double, 2 home runs, both of them solo home runs. That's not his fault. So just 2 RBI and 3 walks to 3 strikeouts. He's right now been the guy that we hoped he would be. Now, if you look, it is very obvious as to why he has done better this week. The pitching profile that Mark and I said is probably best for him, he's been playing a lot against those guys. Guys who don't have exceptional fastballs. Their high velocity fastball wasn't heavy through this last week. And so you saw him, you saw him hit an opposite field home run. I think that was the one against McKenzie, or that was, I can't remember.
It was McKenzie, because I remember it was a 94 mile per hour fastball well above the zone. And McKenzie doesn't ride it up to 94 much.
I'm pretty sure it was him, but
might have been.
I'm pretty sure it was. Because that was the one right after Sal had hit one, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But yeah, just good to see him start to hit because one, it deepens this lineup. But then there's always the thought of, is he going to be somebody that somebody wants at the trade deadline? And how could the Royals improve their team possibly by giving up a Hunter Renfroe if they feel like they have something that can take that place? Although, you know, for example, if Velasquez has changed something and feels like he's made a big step in AAA, then maybe Hunter Renfroe is easier to deal if you can get something for him.
That would be a super bold move, and I'd be a huge fan of it if they decided to do something like that, because that is just, I'm a fan of any team being that bold. And I think it takes boldness like that to really change your fortunes. And so, yeah, I'd love a move like that. That'd be super bold. But good job for Hunter Renfroe. Good job for Hunter Renfroe finding a way to produce some offense this week. That's going to help tremendously. The guy that I'm talking about produced a ton of offense this last week, and that's Vinny Pasquantino. He went 11-for-27 with 1 double, 3 home runs, 9 RBI, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. He's locked in. He has heated up. And the thing that's making the difference, I looked up a bunch of research on him today because to write that thing for the Substack. The big difference for him, he's doing the two things that Vinny Pasquantino will always have to do to be successful in Major League Baseball. he's pulling the ball and he's hitting it in the air. Vinny Pasquantino is an odd first base DH profile because he doesn't have a ton of raw power. He has good raw power, maybe even slightly above average raw power, but it's not exceptional. And so he can't hit the ball to all fields and hit it out consistently. He can't, he's got to pull the ball to get his best outcomes. And that's what he was doing this week. 60% pull rate this week coming into today. We saw him do it more today. I think he pulled at least two. He only didn't pull one ball he put in play today. And you know, that's the sort of thing. He got a hit off that one too. So he's just really hot right now. But pulling the ball is always a good formula for Vinny Pasquantino. And he did it a lot this week. Mike, there were a few people who were not hitting on all cylinders this week. Who'd you choose as a weak performer?
Yeah, like I said, it was tough to find a weak performer this week, especially on the pitching side. And so I went with another hitter here in Nick Lofton. I think Lofton's been about what people have wanted him to be and what a lot of Royals fans have wanted him to be so far this year. He just had a tough week. He went 1-for-15, no extra base hits. He did have 4 walks to just 3 strikeouts, which if he can keep kind of in that range of getting his walks, he'll never be a walk more than I strike out guy. He's never going to be a high walk guy because he just swings so much. But, you know, that's helpful. He's played a lot of third base. He's, you know, he's had some hits this year in big situations where they needed him. So I'm not worried about Nick Lofton or anything like that.
Yeah, a guy I am worried about, though, is my weak performer for the week.
Lofton, we've talked about him.
Basically took his third base spot when he moved over to second. That's Mikel Garcia. He went 3-for-27 this week with 1 double, 1 triple, which is nice. 2 walks and 5 strikeouts. Garcia is just not finding it. And I thought, hey, maybe this is just a bad at ball outcome thing. Maybe his expected numbers are better. I went and looked at those over the last week. They're garbage too. And so this is not a, oh, he's getting bad luck kind of situation. He's in a deep funk. And part of that is he really hasn't learned to distinguish between pitches that are strikes and pitches that are strikes that he should swing at. There's a difference there, right? And so when he figures out, hey, in this count, I need to be looking only at particular pitches in this area I can do damage on, I'm more likely to get good outcomes from, then he'll be better. The problem is, when we talked about this with Javier Vaz, when he was a guest, was it last week's episode? Yeah, I think that was last week's episode. Javier Vaz is the type of guy who needs to swing less because he can make contact with a lot of pitches in the strike zone that are not going to be good outcomes for him. Mikel Garcia is the same way. He has a good enough hit tool to make contact with a lot of pitches in the strike zone that are just going to be bad outcomes for him. And so he needs to figure out a way to focus in on the areas where he can do the most damage, and then he'll have some better outcomes. Mike, it's a winning week, so the theme better be vibes high. What do you got for a theme this week?
This is sultry vibes high, so you know it's good.
It gets no more sultry vibes high than the Sieg.
Than the Sieg. I was channeling a Dodge commercial earlier, and I decided to go with one that, you know, kind of stuck in me. And I think for some reason I've been listening to a lot of Bob Seger, so I was like, okay, we can do this. So it's from that Bob Seger classic, Like a Rock. Stood there boldly, sweating in the sun. Felt like a million, felt like number one, the height of summer. I'd never felt that strong, like a rock. Okay. So I went with that one because, you know, it's been super hot and the boys played really good this week. And I was like, yeah, like a million, man. And so I went with, yeah, they've been like a rock, starting rotation especially. And they were friggin' unbelievable this week. They were unbelievable.
Just
even Reagan's had the worst start of all of them.
Yeah, he did. But what's weird is just this 4-game series has just been a bunch of fun baseball to watch. It's not just because they won. It's because they played well. And so it was just a lot of fun baseball to watch. But I am a little disappointed that you didn't sing that line. That verse.
That's there. Such a slow line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so slow.
You are a coward.
I can't do that to Sieg.
I'm taking a song lyric as well from another vocally talented group, much like Bob Seger, another great songwriter, and Paul Simon. This is from Simon and Garfunkel. It's Funkel. It's called the from a song called "The Boxer." I'm sure many of you have heard it and know it. The line is, "I just chose the small version of it. Mike, you want to do the long version of it? The whole verse. It's that good. Gosh. I feel bad. Okay. In a clear, I'm not a coward either, so I have to sing.
Oh, in a clearing stands a boxer.
In a clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminder of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame. I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. It's that last line. That
you are really no love. Garfunkel.
That I'm no Garfunkel or Simon. I'm neither. But I got him in here. I got nothing.
Art Garfunkel is rolling over in his grave. I think he's alive.
He's still alive.
His music career is dead. He's rolling over in his musical career.
And grave. Paul Simon will not speak with him. Did you know that? They don't speak anymore. They hate each other. Anyway, the line that I chose is, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. And that just, the idea of this week to me is like the Royals had a chance to fold, to like leave after that Rangers and A series last week. And they just kept fighting and kept fighting and kept fighting. Grab two of three from the Marlins. Fight, fight, fight. And they come out and it's like gangbusters against Cleveland. And it's like, they got a boxer's mentality and I love it. Royals Weekly is brought to you by Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Phoenix has all of our favorite things. Year-round golf, year-round baseball, and Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Whether you want to buy your dream retirement home or just stay a while and catch spring training, Eric can help you find the perfect house. We've known him for 30 years and trust him far more than we even trust each other.
I once replaced Mark's driver's license with a fake that had the name of a wanted drug trafficker on it. Let's just say he's now intimately familiar with the texture of a rubber glove.
Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd and home sales and purchases for those who want to stay a while longer. Are you a baseball player or parent who needs a place in the Phoenix area? Eric will find you the perfect spot fast. Want to spend your day shanking golf balls into the great beyond? Eric knows the golf scene like Mike knows how to make fake IDs. Find Eric online at ericoxer.com. If you can figure out how to spell his name, it's ericoxer.com. Or just shoot him a text at 480-383-9745. That's 480-383-9745. Even if you're just curious about what he can do for you, he's 100% no pressure, one of the best people we know.
And he would never get someone falsely charged with drug trafficking, Mike.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The MLB draft is just 2 weeks away, and that means it's time to start thinking about picks beyond the Royals' first-round pick. Yes, the Royals have the sixth overall pick, which is great, but they also have picks 39 and 41, which gives them three day-one picks. That's a lot of opportunity to infuse this farm system with talent. Mike, before we start talking about specific prospects, what are your hopes in terms of the strategy that they take approaching these three picks?
So, I kind of have actually liked some of the things they've done in this area in the last 5 years, even at the end of the Dayton Moore years. I liked some of those. I like if you go for guys who still have very high ceilings in this end of first sandwich round, compensatory round thing. I want a high ceiling, but they may have one or two strikes against them, kind of like, oh, he's got an injury issue, or, oh, he has this one tool that's really bad, but the others all happen to be really high. He just needs that kind of a thing. Or, oh, he has no defensive value or defensive position, things like that. Or even like high school guys, you know, sometimes high school guys even come with baggage issues like that. So, I want somebody with a really high ceiling still.
Yeah, I agree. If you can find those high ceiling guys that late, it makes a ton of sense to take them, because there is absolutely no value in drafting a 4A player. There is no value whatsoever in drafting a guy who will never make it to Major League Baseball. And so you need dudes who have the ceiling to at least make it to Major League Baseball. And for me, that means you're looking for athletes. I'm often paying attention to, in that, you know, back end of the first round or compensatory picks, top end of the second round, that sort of thing, I'm looking for dudes who are good enough athletes to be top end of the first rounders, but have a flaw that's keeping them from having that, from being that. And so that's really what I'm targeting. Yeah. You'll see that in the guys that I've chosen, but I'm looking for athletes. I'm looking for dudes who look like He's going to have the exit velocities to play Major League Baseball. He's going to throw hard enough to play Major League Baseball. He's going to throw with well enough with good enough spin or good enough stuff or whatever. That's what I'm looking for. We'll teach you the other stuff as best as we can, but I'm looking for athletes to a large degree. All right, Mike, let's talk about specific names, specific prospects. That's what everybody wants to hear about. We're going to do a dream scenario and a realistic scenario for each, for the 39 pick and the 41 pick. So this is a dream scenario, Mike. You can pick anyone as long as they're not rated higher than 30th on MLB Pipeline's board. You can take that as your dream pick for either your dream pick or your realistic pick. We also used other boards to like just sort of do this research. So I used Baseball America and Prospects Live and stuff like that. But no higher than 30th on MLB Pipeline's board. Mike, go. Who is your dream pick for this 39th pick?
I feel bad because I immediately broke the rules.
I'm shocked. I am shocked. The guy who tried to get me arrested, Narco Mercantes or whatever that's called.
Narco Traficantes.
Narco Traficantes is breaking the rules.
I'm sorry. I did, as often happens, I more skim the outline.
I didn't really read the rules. I didn't
read the whole thing first. So my guy is not much higher than 30th. Okay. He is the 28th, and I was thinking of him at pick 39, and this is the Major League Baseball draft, and those things happen sometimes, especially with a kid like this, because there is some uncertainty here, and I'm talking about Theo Gillen, who is a second base slash outfield slash he's played so little high school baseball, they don't really know where he's going to play. but he's at Westlake, Texas High School, if you've ever heard of Westlake.
Isn't that where Bobby Wood Jr. played?
I don't know. I can't remember, but there's supposed to be a great program there in like a ritzy suburb of Dallas, I think.
Sounds like Bobby Wood Jr.
Yeah, sounds about right. High school kid out of Texas. He's a phenomenal athlete, they say, with an above average hit tool, above average power, and above average running ability. Above average hit tool and above average power, and you can run? Why isn't this guy a top 10 pick? Because he has had injuries almost entirely in high school. He's already had a surgically repaired labrum and a knee problem and a groin issue. And so he's really only played like one season or two seasons of high school baseball. And so you're kind of betting on tools here. And he's done some stuff in showcase, things like that. And he did have a good senior season this past year. But they don't even really know the defensive position. There's a lot of contention over, is he actually as fast as some people have timed him? Other people are saying, no, he's slower than that, and he's not going to play center. He also does not have a great arm. So if he doesn't play something like center field, you're talking about a second baseman or a left fielder only. So there could be limitations on the defensive value, but the hitting seems to be legit and then seems to be above average in multiple categories as a high schooler.
I would be shocked if this kid gets taken high enough to sign with a team.
You think he's going to college?
Yeah, I think what teams are going
to
want is,
you don't think somebody under slots and maybe gets him?
I think teams want him to go to college so he can prove he can stay healthy for a couple years, and then they'll take him.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know, man. There's some people saying he might be the best hitter, high school hitter in the class.
Give us your realistic pick.
Sorry, that was my dream. Realistic one's also an interesting dude, though. David Shields, left-handed pitcher at a Mount Lebanon High School in Pennsylvania. Really good athlete, was a high school quarterback. Fastball in the mid-90s already, like 94-ish. An above-average slider. He does have two other pitches that are grayed out as below average, probably. Below average to average for a high schooler. But here's the interesting thing about him. He's still just 17 years old because he reclassified into 2024 class. And he's now focusing exclusively on baseball. He's committed to Miami, okay, but it looks like he's got the beginning of a great tool set. Being a good athlete, those guys, generally speaking, you feel like you can work with command if you need to. There's more velocity. He's very projectable body because he's not super super tall, but he's got like really long arms. I think David Shields could be a kind of a high end ceiling left-handed pitcher like we got in Walters last year from the right side.
Very interesting pick. I looked at him and considered him as well. For my dream pick, I'm going with a guy named Dakota Jordan. He is a center fielder from Mississippi State, a draft eligible sophomore. You know, I'm a big fan of the draft eligible sophomores, Mike.
Yep.
And he is a phenomenal athlete. He went to Mississippi State to play both football and baseball. He was a wide receiver. And so, yeah, he's fast as hell. but he also can hit quite a bit. He hit 354, 459, 671 as a slugging over in 2024 with 20 home runs. Great athleticism, huge exit velocities and bat speed. Has maybe the fastest bat in college baseball. He needs polish in the outfield. He has hit tool questions, strikes out a little bit too much. There's reports from scouts that he has trouble with breaking balls. That being said, he's a dude who doesn't have a ton of time focusing only on baseball. He doesn't have a ton of time playing college baseball. He's only done it for a couple years, right? And so he's a dude who I want that raw dough that late in the first round, or that I guess 39th would be a compensatory first round. I think that's a big high upside pick that you take and you say, we know like he needs polish in the outfield. He's fast, but he's not like, he doesn't have, take great routes. He doesn't get great breaks. What are the Royals really, really good at? Turning guys into good outfielders, turning guys into good base runners, that sort of thing. So they can maximize that speed. And then you improve his hit tool a little bit. You help him cut down on the strikeouts a little bit. And you have yourself somebody who could be a force in center field at Kauffman Stadium for a long time.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Yeah, can I take him?
I took him knowing that I took him. I filled this out before Mike did because I wanted to make sure that I got the guys that I wanted. So I took him knowing that you would have ended up on him if you had gone first.
I like him a lot.
The pitcher I've decided to go with is a guy named, I think people are overlooking this guy a lot. I don't know exactly where he was on the pipeline board, but it was lower.
I got it pulled.
It was lower than I thought. His name is Luke Holman. He's a right-handed pitcher out of LSU. In 91 and two-thirds innings pitched, he went, so what did you say, 55th?
45th
on MLB Pipeline's board. I think he belongs higher than that. In 92 and two-thirds innings pitched, he had a 2.75 ERA. That's in the SEC at one of the best programs in the country. He had 127 strikeouts and 33 walks for a 0.98 whip. Good frame, 6'4", 200 pounds, good command, good pitchability. He's got a four-pitch mix. People question how good his fastball will be. I agree with that, but he has a really good slider, and he's got other – I think he has feel to make some of that curveball and that changeup a little bit better. I also think there's a non-zero chance that he can improve the velocity on his fastball and may even be able to improve some of its characteristics. And so – I look at him.
You teach him a cutter, you turn him into Corbin Burns.
Exactly. Or something like that, right? Like there is there are options out there. There are options out there for a guy with this kind of frame, with this kind of athleticism, to go out there and say, we're going to get you some kind of usable fastball, and then your slider is going to play up real well. We're going to make your changeup a little bit better, and you're good to go. Okay. Mike, that's pick 39. What do you got for pick 41?
Pick 41. My dream pick is a guy that does scare some people. And so I think there's a good chance he's going to be there at 41. It's Jonathan Santucci, the left-handed pitcher out of Duke. Okay. Another great athlete. All right. Mid-90s fastball, wipeout, dominant slider. Was a two-way guy at times for Duke, but lately has focused, I think, or later this year, just focused on pitching. The big thing for him is he's got command issues. He's only got three pitches and the third one's not very good. But he doesn't have – the command issues are the biggest concern here. The reason that kind of gets me is probably trauma. I'm going to call it Asa Lacy trauma because there's some similarities here. Now, their deliveries are a little different because Lacy's was just different. I mean, he had a kind of an odd delivery from like a three-quarters kind of thing. This guy's a little more over the top. But, Santucci, if you can improve that command, and he's a good athlete, if you can improve that command – you're talking about a guy who's got potential mid rotation to maybe even front of the rotation if another secondary pitch takes a big step forward.
My guess is there are a lot of people out there screaming, this guy's going to be a reliever.
There are a lot of people saying that too.
Yeah. Mike, who's your reliable pick? Your safe pick at 41.
My safe pick at 41. I went deep on this one because I saw him pitch, I think in a regional, a super regional this spring. It's Ryan Prager, left-handed pitcher out of Texas A&M. Real interesting story, this guy. He was the he was going to get drafted out of high school. He was the valedictorian of his high school class. And so he had basically let teams know, I'm going to college. And so nobody drafted him. He went undrafted because of that. And so
baseball hates a smart guy. Pitchability. They hate a smart guy.
I know, I guess. Right. But he misses. Here's the other thing that kind of derailed his career. He made the weekend rotation at Texas A&M as a true freshman, but he tore out he blew out his UCL. Okay. So then he misses that time recovering, and then they redshirt him the next year too. So he only pitched 1 year at Texas A&M, but he was the number one starter for that 1 year. And also because of that injury time, his fastball velocity has not improved since high school. He still only sits in the low 90s, but he gets swing and miss with it in the low 90s. He's got a really great slider. He's got a good changeup. He's got 60 grade command, okay, for a college lefty. I think you draft a guy like Ryan Prager, you give him some time to develop that fastball a little bit, and if you do, if he increases 2 miles per hour velocity-wise just on average, you've got yourself a steal. You know, I think he would have gone much, much higher if not for the injury thing.
Yeah, that's actually a really good pick. I like that a lot. because, you know, that's one of the things the Royals have been known to do is look for guys who took a Tommy John's in their college experience. They did it with Hunter Patterson. They did it with a couple other guys. And that's something they look for. So it wouldn't be surprising if they look for Prager as a interesting option at the beginning of the second round. The guy I'm going with as my dream scenario is I'm going all college guys. I just realized this. His name is Mike Zerota. He's a center fielder from Northeastern, which is a college in Boston. He's kind of a – right now he's more of a contact over power, good athlete, fast, will stick in center field, good on-base ability. But I think his frame has enough size and enough to add strength. I think he'll be able to add strength in Major League Baseball. He hit for a .298 average, a .473 on base, and a .513 slugging at Northeastern in 2024. So obviously there's going to be some competition concerns. He didn't play in the SEC or anything like that. But he's a dude, if you look at his body, you immediately see, oh, see those legs? He can put muscle on those legs, right? Like, I mean, just look at him. I watched him take some BP. I watched some games he was in. And you see right there are places to put muscle on this frame. And that's what they'll do when he gets to Major League Baseball. And he'll be able to hopefully add some power to that. But if nothing else, he takes a good plate appearance. He can get on base. And he has the capacity to stick in center field. That's all you're looking for when it comes to, you know, he's sort of like Dakota Jordan, except the less athletic and the higher floor than maybe Dakota Jordan has. My realistic pick is going to be a pitcher as well, Mike. I went with Ryan Johnson. He's a right-handed pitcher out of Dallas Baptist University. He is an interesting dude. If you looked at his numbers, you would assume he was going to go in the top half of the first round, especially this year. This year has been an insanely good year for offense in college baseball. Offenses are destroying in college baseball. And so you look at the numbers like he has, and you're like, what the hell? How's this guy not going in the top 10? 106 innings pitched, 2.21 ERA, 151 strikeouts, only 14 walks. You heard that right. 151 strikeouts, 14 walks. He's 6'6", big, tall guy, lanky guy, great numbers. Why is he not going to the top of the first round? Because scouts are worried about his delivery. He has a very three quarters delivery. It's not what you would call, there's a little bit of effort in there as well. And now that delivery helps him produce a lot of movement on some pitches, but it also worries that he's going to get injured and all these sort of things, that he'll have trouble repeating it. So trouble commanding and stuff like that. And so now where he has the stuff to go after weaker competition at Dallas Baptist, he can probably just aim middle and let his stuff do the work. That's not going to be the case as he moves through professional baseball. And so they start to worry like, oh, is this delivery and a lack of command that comes from it, is that going to keep him from really finding success in pro ball? I'm willing to take a chance on something like that. I think sometimes guys just have different deliveries and that's fine. And they learned that way. And so they're going to be fine with it. And so I'd be taking a chance on a guy like Ryan Johnson at 41. Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. You already know that All In Physical Therapy helped turn our mother into someone capable of snapping a neck with her pinky toe. But what you don't know is that Mom loved her experience there because of the personal attention she got from Tommy and the staff at All In. They guarantee a personalized one-on-one experience to suit the needs of patients recovering from total joint surgeries, sports injuries, or any kind of injury or pain.
I'm thinking of getting all my joints replaced. I'll be freaking RoboCop.
All In Physical Therapy is owned and operated by Tommy Frevert, with locations in Blue Springs and Lee Summit, and coming soon to Belton. But more importantly, they're in-network for nearly all insurance providers.
RoboCops are always in-network.
Always. A RoboCop always shows up, you're giving him whatever he wants, honestly.
Whatever he wants.
If you're a high school
athlete... We forget how freaking violent that movie was. That movie was,
so violent. So violent. If you're a high school athlete recovering from injury or someone bouncing back from a brand new hip or knee, check out the best physical therapy in the KC Metro at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. Or give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Royals get an off day here at home to start this week before facing the Rays in a three-game series at the K, followed by another three-game series in Denver against the Rockies. So it's an interesting home off day for them. That's nice for them, be able to hang out at home with their families. Mike, tell us about the Rays, who are not doing as well as they typically do.
Yeah, they're kind of having a pretty meh season for them. 42-42, which is good for fourth in the AL East because that division is harder than crap. I don't think you had any probables listed, but this is the rotation order, so it should be Singer.
This is correct now. This is correct. Oh, actually, is. Yeah, they updated it. Yeah.
All right, cool. So it'll be Brady Singer versus Zach Littell, 28-year-old right-handed pitcher out of Eastern Alamance High School in North Carolina. 4.17 ERA and a 1.36 whip, so not stellar numbers there. He's a slider, splitter, four-seamer in the low 90s, sinker, sweeper, heavy on the slider, I assume there.
Yeah.
Only throws a four-seamer about 21% of the time and one of the best in Major League Baseball at limiting walks, so he's a strike thrower. Michael Wacha going game two there against Ryan Pierpoint, 26-year-old righty out of Butler University, 4.40 ERA and a 1.09 whip. He's got a four-seam fastball that averages 95, slider, changeup. He's got a curveball and a cutter, but throws those very little. Fastball is very good, 95th percentile in run value. He throws it over 50% of the time. We know the Royals struggle with those kind of fastballs, so that may be a tough matchup in that third and final, second game, sorry, in that second game. Hopefully Wacha can shut them down. Marsh will go in the third game against Zach Eflin, 30-year-old righty out of Hagerty High School in Florida, 3.92 ERA for Eflin and a 1.12 whip. Sinker, cutter, curveball, sweeper, four-seamer in the low 90s, a changeup. A real pitch-to-contact kind of guy, and he limits walks, 1.9% walk rate this year. That is crazy.
I know. I saw that, and I had to go look it up and be like, is this actually right? Like, I had to check multiple sources because I'm like, I haven't seen a walk rate that low ever among somebody who's thrown more than two
as
innings.
As much as Eflin does.
Yeah,
jeez.
Yeah.
1.9. Good golly. Way to go, Zach Eflin. You know what I was thinking as I was reading that? I'm going, I wonder if Zach Eflin's a guy who could get traded at the deadline here. He's not terrible. He can give you a chance. Anyway, he doesn't strike people out either. Under 20% for a strikeout rate for old Zach Eflin. Does just enough to stay off barrels. And so hopefully he's a little bit of a crafty righty. So hopefully we can touch him up a little bit. Real good contrast there. Both righties in that game. Marsh pretty much all strikeout and can't limit the walk sometimes. Eflin, very little strikeout, but doesn't walk anybody.
After they take on the Rays here at home, they're going to head over to Denver for some, mountain air
omelets
and some. What do you get over in Denver? Besides, you can't get
a Denver
omelet. Now you can get weed here, so it doesn't really matter.
Get some weed and a Denver omelet.
What else? Weed, extremely high housing prices, and a Denver omelet.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll take on the Rockies, who are just a garbage fire of an organization. 28-55, they're last in the NL West. Shocker. Everyone is shocked. offense, they have an 82 weighted runs created plus as an offense, which is 28th in Major League Baseball. They're getting good seasons from Ryan McMahon and Ezekiel Tovar. They've also got a couple guys on the IL right now who were doing okay before they went on the IL, and Elias Diaz and Charlie Blackman, but they may not be back for this series. They might, though. They're just on the 10-day IL, I think, and so we'll see if they're back. The pitching side, believe it or not, is even worse. They are 30th in Major League Baseball in ERA by a full run. They are a full run worse than the 29th team in Major League Baseball.
Whoa.
Yeah. Their best starter right now is Cal Quantrill, who was, I believe, DFA'd by Cleveland. He's having a decent year, but that's all for starters having a decent year. Their bullpen is the, if you, Royals fans, if you think that the Royals bullpen is like aggravating, go take a look at what the Rockies are rolling at us a bullpen every night. It is the stuff nightmares are made of. Okay. It is awful. And that's why they're the worst team in Major League Baseball, probably. We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just a Bit Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball. Mike, your life is like you're like life in the fast lane. That song was based in your life, I think. Tell us what's going on in the last week.
You know, and they didn't pay me a dime.
I know.
Okay. Glenn Frey. What a thief.
he's besmirching the name of a dead man right here at the end of the episode. Just to top things off. Know,
just a legendary musician and songwriter in America. No big deal. But no, I hesitate to do this because of the shame that you have brought our family.
It's not shameful, but it's probably bad advice.
Okay.
It's probably a bad influence, but yes. It's
Mark and I, in our lives, have been known to enjoy a certain fast food restaurant that is considered extremely unhealthy for you in
because
McDonald's.
It is okay? Extremely unhealthy for you.
We've had a McDouble or two in our lives in our time.
Have you heard Jim Gaffigan's bit about McDonald's?
No.
It's hilarious. It's about this very thing, about being ashamed of being in there. Like, it's hilarious.
he's hilarious. So yes, I'm sure it is. But I'm going to help you out here, people, because not enough people. How do people not know this now? McDonald's has an app. Okay. If you are a person that eats McDonald's, which don't lie to ourselves, we all are. Okay.
But we shouldn't be.
We shouldn't be. We all know we shouldn't be, but we are. The amount of money you can save using the McDonald's app is insane. It's crazy. Okay. You can get 20% off every time you go to McDonald's. You can get free fries every time you go to McDonald's. There's just craziness. Okay. My wife hates that I eat this garbage. But she, the other day I told her, yeah, she's like, how much money are you spending? I go, I got all this food for $5. She goes, no, you did not. And I had to show her the receipt to be like, hey, look, yes, I did. I got it all for that much money. It is the best business deal in garbage food. And check out the McDonald's app. They aren't paying us. They should be. As much as I'm paying them, they ought to be paying us.
No shit. But every dime this podcast makes goes back to McDonald's, basically.
In one way or the other, yes, that is true. But no, check out that McDonald's app. You want to save on a McDouble or a Big Mac. Woo!
Yes, that is probably the most unhealthy thing Mike has ever said in this segment, I'm pretty sure.
No, that's not, no way.
Yeah, probably not. He drinks routinely when you can all hear it, I'm sure. But anyway.
No, I don't.
No, he doesn't. I'm talking about the elation that I felt finishing a home project. So it has occasionally come up on the show over the course of the last 4 months or something like that, as I've been continuously doing these home projects. But a long time ago now, 3 or 4 months ago, my partner and I started a home project that was, I don't know what to call it because it doesn't have like a name, but it was essentially like a project just as you enter our house. We were putting up like some wooden slats on the wall where we could put coat hangers and stuff like that. And we'll have like a little bench and stuff like that. But in the middle of doing this project, we also destroyed half our living room to make it happen. And so we had to repair all of that. And it became a very long process. And then we started building a fence in the middle of that too. And it just became a nightmare. All the people out there who own homes right now can feel and hear the anxiety and the frustration inside, if you know what I'm talking about here. But this week, we finished that original home project. And it was like an amazing feeling to have it done. It was amazing how it turned out. It turned out just like we wanted it to be. It looks great. And we now have a place to hang coats and stuff like that when we come in. And so, yes, I talk a little bit about home projects. We mentioned on the Substack episode midweek that the wood is gone behind me. You may notice on the YouTube, there's no wood back there. That's because we used it. We've now finished the project with that wood. But it just feels really great. And that's all I've been thinking about this week is how awesome it feels to have this project finished. And so that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Now that you're done with that, you can come help me paint my deck.
Yay. No, I'm not doing that.
Or, yeah. Or I've got like 20 other things we need to do.
Well, so you know, I'm still doing a fence. I mean, come on here.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, that's all we have for this week. Thank you so much for joining us on Royals Weekly presented by Bet Online. We'll be back again next week to talk more Royals. Hopefully, we see series sweeps against the Rays and the Rockies, and we're talking about a long-ass winning streak of some sort. That would be very nice. But until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.